broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and we go anywhere, everywhere. What do we do when we go anywhere and everywhere?
Other talk shows.
We go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. And we go out on point, and sometimes we get shot, and sometimes we get killed. But we go out there. Anyway, welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and there are reasons for that. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. It's 877-876-PHIL. We're going to have Mr. Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy on with us in our first hour to talk about the Oakland protests, Occupy Oakland. And again, something we're interested in this show, which is how do teachers, how do the educators of America, how do they discuss these things with their students? I think that current events, especially with high school students, obviously is extremely important to discuss. And what's going on in the classrooms of America when we look at... I remember when I was in high school...
Here we go.
I'm going to talk about my time in high school. What's here we go mean?
Well, I mean, you're not going to do a long-winded thing, are you?
Who cares if it's long-winded? Do you mind if I... What is it with you guys all of a sudden? You know, I'm talking about who we're going to have on the show, and here we go.
Boy, you're not giving a speech, are you?
What am I doing here?
I mean, you're doing a talk show.
I'm doing a talk show. So what are you doing a talk show?
You talk.
You talk.
Yeah, but you talk too much.
Get out of here. Talk too much. Funny man. When I was in high school, I was about to say, there was quite a bit happening in the country. We had the Vietnam War. We had the campus protests had just blown open big time. Columbia University, Kent State happened. I remember my senior year in high school, that happened. And a lot of stuff. And then the civil rights movement, that too had morphed and exploded into a great deal of civil violence in the cities. The country was in great distress, I remember, as a high school student. And it's funny, when you're young, and maybe this is the good thing about, one of the good things about being young is it's all just sort of interesting and fascinating, but you're not really sweating it. I mean, I don't ever remember worrying about the future of the country. I always felt, well, it's just kind of America, you know, and here I am, and I'm a kid, and this is great, and woo, you know. So with that as a context... Tonight we're going to have Mr. Vernon Dozier on. We'll see if there's if our high school students today feel the same way. 877-876-PHIL is our number. Let me get over here to Chris. Did we get our affiliate spotlight tonight, Chris? Where's that at, man? What happened to it? I came in here and I don't see anything. All right, no affiliate spotlight. No, I think I. Uh-huh. You just sent it now. That's great. So we have Orlando, WEUS, and Tucson, KJLL. And as far as our free month goes, I want to remind you that you can go over to our website and take a look at our website, first off and foremost, and look at all the things we have to offer at philhendryshow.com. But if you want to qualify for a free month of the Phil Hendry website, get a free month of a backstage pass, there are two things you can do and be eligible for our drawing, which will happen at the end of the month. And that is go over to our fan page, Phil Hendry. You go to facebook.com/Phil Hendry fans, P-H-A-N-S, facebook.com/Phil Hendry fans, and like the page. Now, if you've already done that, if you did that before we had the contest, you can go over to Twitter and go to twitter.com/Phil Hendry show and hashtag PHS at twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show and be eligible for the drawing of a free month of Phil at the end of October for the month of November. In addition to that, if you want to listen to the Phil Hendry Show for free, that's right, on our website as a podcast, you can go over it's not a podcast, it's the streaming version of our show. You can go over the next day at philhendryshow.com and listen to a commercial-free stream of our show from the previous night for free. It is not a download, but it is a sample of what you can hear if you have a backstage pass. So it's all over there at philhenryshow.com. Please do join us for that. We think you will enjoy it, and we work very hard to bring all of the fine entertainment to you. Vernon Dozier on the line from Glendale, California, the senior class advisor there at Belmar Academy. He's also government and civic affairs teacher. He's the varsity football coach over there and is a member of the board at Belmar Academy. Coach, you're a busy man.
But I do it. It's a labor of love, Phil, so I enjoy it very much.
How long have you been there?
This will be my 21st year.
21 years. You've been the head football coach there, as well as a senior class and junior class advisor, as well as a member of the board. So you know that campus and you know that community very well.
I think I do. We've had so many great kids come through our school. We've had so many great families that have been a part of our school, and I've gotten to know all of them through the years. We've seen our young people grow up. Some of them go on to become quite successful in the field that they tackle, some becoming quite prominent. We had a number of our young people from our football program go on to coach. A couple of them actually made it onto Division I college football, and one or two, I think, of our young people have made it as far as the National Football League or Canadian Football League. And so we're very proud of our program, whether it be our academia or our sports programs, our athletic program. We're very proud of it.
Now, you have in recent days been talking with your class about the Occupy Wall Street movement, correct?
I have, yes.
Okay, tell me what shape, what form, what kinds of discussions you have had. And these are seniors?
They're both our seniors and our juniors, yeah.
And what is the name of the class?
Well, we have a couple. We have our government affairs government. We have current affairs. Civics, which is civics, is really just the application of government, the application of government and community life, the current affairs and current events, and also in our social events class, we take up quite a bit of this.
You don't have anything at a high school level like political science, do you?
Well, we don't call it political science per se, but we do have some. Introductory lessons and instruction in political science for some of our seniors, because we do have a two-track program. But we have talked about this as a current event, as a social event, in both our junior and our senior classes.
How has that been going?
Well, I've taken a particular interest in it because this is an area that has just interested me as a citizen. And I think as a teacher, you do the same thing you might do as a talk show host. You bring your class issues that you find personally fascinating, and you try to talk to your class about those issues that you find personally fascinating. But fortunately for me, this is not just something that I find personally fascinating. It's also something that's been happening in our news.
And how has that gone? Have you taught, you know, are students offering opinions?
Well, they are offering their opinions. There are, I would say, a lot of them have, I don't know, they've been seduced a little bit by this message that they've been seduced a little bit by this message of egalitarian economies and this kind of thing, and I think that's what happens to young people. It's my job, I think, to point them in the direction of reality. One of the areas that has been disappointing to me is something that I've talked with you about before, Phil, and I talked to my students about it. Either you're going to pay attention to me in class, which is what I tell my students, or you're going to go home to your parents and you're going to pay attention to them. And I'm not saying you shouldn't pay attention to your parents, but when it comes to matters such as these, are you going to listen to me, or are you going to go home and check it out with your father? Are you going to listen to me, or are you going to go home and double check it with your mother? Are you going to give me the respect that I deserve as a college-educated high school teacher, or are you going to go home and sort of huddle with your parents and laugh about the whole thing?
This is something you're dealing with, or
this is something I've dealt with. I think I've talked with you on the program about it before, and it's something that I continue to deal with. Either you're going to sit down and you're going to get the lesson from me, or you want to go home and chuckle about it with your parents. So,
what does that mean? Chuckle about it?
Well, I told just what I said. You know?
Well, what are you telling the kids that they're going to go home to their parents and discuss this? Obviously, these are news events, right?
Yeah, they're news events that you're going to talk about with your parents, but you're not going to go to your parents and say, by the way, Mr. Dozier said this, and isn't he funny? Ha ha, or whatever you're doing, you know, and the parents are saying, yeah, you know, don't pay any attention. Let me tell you, Phil, as it pertains to Occupy Oakland, that they just had the demonstrations here broken up yesterday by Oakland police. And I have watched that situation just like I watched the situation in New York and just like I watched the situation in other cities. And I've watched that situation go from a, I guess you could call it a normal, average protest to a confrontational type of situation. To a bunch of people now sitting on the streets and sitting on a curb, using the street as a toilet, using the gutters as a toilet, causing problems, criminal problems, the police, so forth, the neighborhood getting revolted by their actions, and this goes on and on and on. Now, you'd think that after a while, people would have the common courtesy and the common decency not to use the very streets that we drive on, the streets we walk on, the streets that we may push a baby carriage on. You'd think that knowing that, they'd have the common decency not to use that same street as a latrine or a toilet into which they do their daily business. But that's what they're doing. That's disgusting to me as a citizen. And when the Oakland police acted, and act they did, by bringing in riot police, using these beanbag guns, using, in other words, what they had at their disposal, I got to tell you, Phil, I was relieved. I felt a physical release. I sat in front of my television. I told my students this, and this is what you do when you're talking about community events and civic affairs and however you want to call it. You tell them, this is how I was affected by the news. How are you affected by the news? And I told them, I said, when I saw the Oakland police come in and really, really go to work on some of these demonstrators and get them, just clean it up, almost like a... To me, it was like a fresh snow or a fresh rain had fallen and blew all of this filth. And I don't like to refer to human beings that way, but when you are causing criminal problems and you are using the street as a septic tank, as a place where it's just a hole in a slat of wood, then I think all bets are off, and I think you're going to get what you deserve.
All right, I want to ask you some questions. Our number is 877-876-PHIL with Vernon Dozier, 877-876-7445. Vernon Dozier on the line with us here from Belmar Academy. One final question before the break. You said it was a physical release that you shared with the students?
No, I did not. I said that I told my students, when I saw the police come in with the fire hoses and come in with the beanbag, not the fire hose, the beanbags, and use these sweep and move and sweet grunt move. They call it a sweet grunt because they grunt as they march. If you've ever heard the riot police, they go, like that.
And, yeah, I've heard that.
All right, so when they move that sweep and grunt, I could feel myself relaxing. I could feel myself the tension because I was so wound up by this rabble that had been taking over the streets and turning them into someone's bathroom. There's nothing that disgusts me more. Now, when these kids go home and tell their parents that this is what Mr. Dozier was talking about in class, and the parents call me and say, I don't like you talking that way, they've completely missed the point. They have retensed me. I'd lost my tension, and they call me back, and now I'm tensed up again.
And all right, hold on for a second, Vernon. I want to get back to you.
Certainly.
And you folks at home, 877-876-PHIL. Okay, so Vernon Dozier is a civic affairs teacher at Belmar High School, talking about Occupy Oakland, and basically told the kids there that the police action in cleaning up the streets was something that he welcomed. He was relaxed by it. The kids went home, told their parents, and there's some conflict there. We're going to get more into this discussion on how he communicates with his students and how you may communicate with your young people or vice versa on The Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. The world. world-famous Phil Henry Show.
World-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. On the line with me, Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. Occupy Oakland was a big story overnight. Yesterday, Oakland police went in and, I guess as you put it, Vernon, cleaned things up. I'm still looking for the story here. I know I have it, but I've got it buried somewhere.
I've got to tell you, Phil, I bought the usually buy the newspapers in the morning for the class, and I know I had it for my class today.
Did you talk about this today with the students?
We did talk about it today, and I got phone calls after a couple hours after class, because I am generally there, the teacher lounge or in the administration building. We're either doing these days. What we do is we will set up our modular schedule for the seniors and juniors. We can oftentimes correct papers using computer software that we have, but I had to go to the administration building to get it, and that's when I got some of these phone calls.
And can you give me an example of some of the phone calls you got?
Well, one woman in particular who I get calls from a lot, her name is, I forget her last name.
It's not necessary to use names. It's probably preferable that you not use them.
All right, well, it's one mother who I get a call from her at least once a week, and she's got a new problem every week. And this new problem she had now is she didn't like me saying that I had a good release. Now, let me explain that, because I know you took exception to it, Phil.
Well, it's not exception. It's an unusual way to describe a news event. You know,
I don't know what's unusual about it. You know?
Well, when you say that you saw the police move in with beanbags and you saw the cops break up this demonstration, you felt relaxed?
Yes, sir. I felt a release of tension. I don't think it's unusual to say that the release of the tension is very, you know, it's very palpable. Because I'm looking at...
In other words, there was a lot of fear that the situation was going to get out of control.
I wouldn't call it fear. I would call it more rising anger that I had. I think in that sense I'm more in tune with the American people than, for instance, this mother who called me and made some pretty, some very scurrilous accusations that she said to me. I'm not even going to repeat what she said, because it sounds to me like she come up with some of this because it gives to, that's how she probably, you know, gets her kicks. But I said to the students, when I saw the police go in and I saw a few of them pull out their nightsticks, and when I saw the nightsticks come out and I saw them pull out the riot guns with the beanbags, I did feel myself go, it's just a nice, just if I could give it a sound, it would be like, you know. And
what? Okay.
Well, what is the problem that you're having with this?
Well, when you say you see a guy pull out a nightstick and another guy with a beanbag riot gun, and you go,
No, sir, it is not like that. And I know exactly where you're going with that, Phil, and it's not like that at all. And
well, I'm trying to, did you say this to this mother?
What, the woman that called up?
Yes, sir.
I don't know what I said to her. She, as I said, I get a call from her once a week. She's bothering me about something. And she said, did you tell my daughter? And I said, I didn't tell your daughter anything. I told my students this. Your daughter must have been one of them. And I said, when I saw those people who had been using the street as a toilet, finally getting moved off the street by the police, as well they should have, I felt myself relaxing into it. Almost, I said that, yes, there's a natural kind of a hip motion. Your hip moves out. If I could describe it, you sort of just go, yeah, you know. But I wasn't saying it like it's sex. Now, this mother got on the phone with Bill Hartcast, who is our principal, our assistant principal, and said that I had said something to her along the lines of, I had and forgive me for saying this, Phil, but this is this woman, and this is what's wrong with our parents today, to use these words. She said it sounded like I had a spontaneous emission. And
oh, my God. What is it? What's the disconnect here, Vernon? If we can cut through all of the horse dung.
I'm not giving you any horse. I'm not giving you horse dung.
No, I know you're not, but if we can cut through, in other words, what is the disconnect here? You're telling your students that you saw the police move in on the Oakland demonstrators and you felt good about it, I guess is what you're saying.
I felt not more than good. I was getting angry. I wanted to drive there myself. In other words, I was trying to tell my students that I'm a typical adult American taxpaying voter. And if you kids, meaning my students, if you don't feel this way, there's something, by the time you're an adult, there's something seriously wrong with you.
And, well, that's why the woman called.
Oh, I have no doubt. She probably thought that I was being very, saying that her daughter was had a mental problem because she didn't want to, you know, when she seen these cops go in there and just take these demonstrators out, and I wanted to see one of those battering ram tanks, if you've ever seen the SWAT teams. That's what I wanted to see. I was so sick and tired of looking at these people. And I told this mother in candor, and I should never have done it, but I said, I just looked at that and I went, yeah, like that. And she was very insulting. And
hold on, Vernon. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Vernon Dozier as we talk about Occupy Oakland and what he said to his students today
Phil
in school.
Henry.
Yeah.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. It's 877-876-PHIL. We're talking with Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy about Occupy Oakland. The police moved in yesterday, and they got the demonstrators out of there with tear gas, with bean bags, with just about anything at the disposal of the police to put down an unlawful assembly. The news is that the neighborhood was complaining about this so-called Occupy Oakland demonstration, that there had been some criminality, that there had been unsanitary conditions and so forth. And on the line with us is Vernon Dozier. He's talking to his students about this. And interestingly enough, he's been getting pushback from some of the parents on how he has communicated his feelings about Occupy Oakland to his students. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And a reminder that we're online at philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com, our website. With a backstage pass, you get live streaming video of our show. You get thousands of hours of archived material, downloads. All of it is being turned into downloads as we speak. And it is the single largest library and archive of one radio show anywhere in the world, and most probably in history. It goes back 15 years of radio material, and it's grade-A stuff. So join us at philhenryshow.com, and we're giving away a free month as well to one lucky listener. We're going to have a drawing at the end of our month. Vernon, thank you, and we're back. And all right, so I forget where we left off, but I was asking you, I think, about the reaction of parents and your own reaction, which was, would you agree that the way you described your reaction was, and just to reset.
If you don't mind, Phil, I'd like to reset it if that's what you wanted to do. It.
Go ahead.
Because I think that what happened was is I said to this mother of this girl, and I'll tell you what their name is, Cassidy. That's the, I won't give any first names, but the last name this woman Cassidy calls me, and she said that my daughter said that in class today you said, number one, you are the one that gives the word, and when they go home to their parents, you know, there's a loyalty problem. She said they should be loyal to me. I'm the mother. And I said, well, yes, of course you should. But when it comes to information about history and news, obviously, if the choice is between you, Mrs. Cassidy, and me, I think that's a no-brainer. They got to rely on me. And she said, why do you say that? I said, because I'm the teacher. I said, and you are, and I'd spoken to this woman. I know who she is, and I like her. But I told her, I was blunt. I said, you are not, you know, I just said she'd have to rely on me because you know.
What did you say to her?
Well, I told her, I said, you know, when it comes to these, when it comes to these matters, Mrs. Cassidy, I said, you just aren't that clued in. You know, I probably was a little bit, I wasn't quite that refined, you know.
You're not clued in.
I told her, I said, you're not that bright. I said, and she got all upset when I said that. I said, well, your husband, I've talked to your husband, and he's told me how, and I probably shouldn't have done that, but
So in other words, you made it worse.
How did I make it worse?
Because you're saying, Mrs. Cassidy, you know, this and that.
Well, you wanted to talk about this lady. I didn't want to bring her up.
You brought up this woman.
I understand that, sir, but I didn't want to make an issue out of how stupid this one woman is. You know,
Well, you say to her and your husband thinks you're not bright?
I I told her, I said, Miss Cassidy, your own husband, got the name of William, which I guess I just gave away the name.
Yeah, you did.
All right, but you're telling me this man, I said, your own husband said you're not all that bright. And I got to agree. And I said, you know, I said, when I saw the tear gas come out, I felt a physical relaxation because I was very angry. And I went, ah, like that. And she said, well, that sounds to me like you just got your cookies or some disgusting term like that. And I said, how dare you? And that's when I hung up on her. And
oh, God. This is an adult conversation.
I didn't. She said to me, when she goes, did you go, ah, I said, no, I didn't do that. She exaggerated it. Because I said to her, when I saw the tear gas come out and I saw a lot of those hippies taking a nightstick, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I saw one police officer grabbing a hippie by the hair. And I thought the tension release, seeing that alone, almost, I just felt good because for once, a hippie is standing and he's, one minute he's going to the bathroom on the street, the next minute there's a cop with a handful of his hair. And boy, I'll tell you, if it had been me,
If it had been you, what? The guy wouldn't have survived?
Well, if you got a hippie in your left hand and you got a PR-24 in your right, what's the next natural move to make?
I guess swing that PR-24 right into that hippie's head.
You said it, I didn't. You said it.
No, that's what you wanted me to say.
Yes, I did, but, in all honesty...
That's what you wanted me to say.
Yes, I did. Absolutely. If you got a hippie by the hair in your left hand and you got a PR-24 in your right hand, the next logical, honest move to make is to swing that PR-24 with all your might almost through the hippie's head. There, I said it. And I said it to Mrs. Cassidy. I said it to the class. And now I'm saying it to you. And if that makes me a bad man, if that makes me a guy...
Well, it may be... That alone is a very violent image. And
I understand that.
But to follow it up with,
What? What did you just say?
Isn't that what you just told me you did?
I didn't go, I said... To the woman, Cassidy, I said to my class that it was almost a... I said there was a hip thrust and a, like that. I didn't go,
Well, I don't know the difference, sir. And the hip thrust thing puts it all into that sexual light that the lady was talking about.
It's impossible, Mr. Henry, to get through to this woman, and I'm finding increasingly impossible to get through to you. There's nothing sexual about that.
And what do you mean, the hip thrust?
It's involuntary. When you see something that makes you glad you're alive. And yes, when I saw that hippie get grabbed by his hair and I saw that cop drive that PR-24 through the head, he didn't go through the head, but that's what you, I coach baseball and we always tell them, make sure you go through the swing. And that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, I don't want to...
Well, that's great. So, in other words, we're taking batting practice and hitting people with PR-24s.
You asked me a question, sir. All right, and when I see that happen, it gives me joy, and the hip thrusts automatically. It's involuntary. It is.
I've never heard of such a thing. 877-876-PHIL.
Hold on, are you going to cut me off, give your phone number, and that's it? Because I'm telling you, I did.
And you're telling me you have an involuntary hip thrust when you feel happy to be alive?
Yes, sir. Is that what are you talking about?
When you feel happy to be alive, you hunch your hips forward?
Are you trying to make me ashamed that I'm a man?
No, I'm not trying to do anything of the sort.
Because what I said to you was a normal thing. It had nothing to do with sex. I said to this woman, Cassidy, all right, since I gave her husband's name, I'll give her name. Eleanor Cassidy's her name, okay? So now we know who the family is. You wanted a name.
I didn't tell you to... No, I did not tell you anything of the sort. You've given the husband's name and now the wife's name.
All right, well, I'm just telling you now. She said to me that I had been sexual. I said, no, I hadn't. I didn't go, I said I went, and I hunched my hips forward. And that's when she said something. She said she felt fondled or she felt telephonically fondled or something and hung the phone up. And
telephonically fondled, that's...
You call her up. That's what she said to me. She said, I said, do you feel harassed? She said, yes, I do now feel harassed when you went, And I said, no, I didn't. I said, I went, and I hunched my hips. She said, no, you went, And she said she now felt fondled. and she was going to get on the phone with our assistant principal, who's I just got off the phone with, who told me that she's full of crap, that I'm fine, she's a mental case, and but he did say not to do what I did, which he called an it sounded like an exclamatory, passionate expression that he would not have used with one of the
parents.
With one of the parents, yes, sir.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number here on the Phil Henry Show. I'm going to go to Father James McQuarters, who's on the line. And Father McQuarters is at Belmar Academy, one of the diocesan priests there. Father McQuarters.
Yes, Phil.
I have on the line here Coach Dozier.
Yes, I've been listening.
Father, good evening. I didn't know that you were going to be on the phone. I have, I'm talking to Mr. Henry about something completely different now.
Well, I don't think so. Vernon, I called up the radio station. I got the backline number.
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to tell Phil that we had not approved of the method he'd used. I said I didn't mind you talking. I didn't mind that you said what you said about the police officer. But I did mind when you said that you went, or you made this sort of quasi-sexual sound. Because I find it to be... I think it steps over the line. I know Mr. Dozier is a great teacher, Phil, and he is a very verbal man. He's also a very visual man. He gives great many demonstrations and a great many, I guess I would say, Vernon, that you like to act out.
Well, no, what I call it is I give a theatrical history lesson. I do move around the classroom quite a bit, yes.
All right. But the problem I've got is, but I did speak with Eleanor Cassidy. And
you understand that she's a liar.
No, hold on, please. Hold on, because I know that we're on the radio now. And so everything that we say is going to reflect on our school.
Yes, sir.
And everything that we say could very well reflect on the kind of men that you and I are.
Now, you got your TV on, and I can't.
Turn it, Father Staley, turn it down. Please turn that down, Father Staley, please. Please, I'm trying to help the school. Now, Vernon and Phil, are you there?
I'm here, Father, yeah.
All right. What Mr. Dozier done in the history class, I think is an example of a teacher trying to be relevant, and I certainly understand. When he said that he had a physical feeling of satisfaction and release, and felt from within himself and perhaps even deep within his loins, the release that one feels when one feels that art has been restored to the society.
Father, I never said anything about my loins.
Well, then, I don't know what you mean. I heard you say to Mr. Henry...
You said a hip thrust.
I said it, yes. I did say hip thrust, yes.
Well, would you call that a release from the loin?
I do not use that word, but if that's what you want to...
Well, I'm using the word. Would you call that a proper word to use? Would you call it a proper word to use, yes or no?
Father, I want you to know that I respect you, but I don't let anybody, not even a priest, talk to me.
I'm not talking. I'm telling you, and I'm asking you.
I would say that that's a proper word to use.
All right. Now, when you talked to this woman Cassidy and you said to her that you saw the hippie, and I think you said you saw the hippie, and the police officer picked up the hippie by the hair. Did I hear you say that? Is that right?
I said yes. The police officer did.
All right. And the hippie was picked up by the hair. And the police officer drove the baton through the hippie. I hear you say that.
Yes, sir. Are you trying to make this dramatic so you look good and I look like scum?
I'd ask you right now to shut your mouth. What I'm trying to do now is repair the reputation of our school. Now, I have no problem with anything that you say because it's personal opinion. I do think the students need to go home, and yes, I do need, as you like to say, I think they should check this out with their parents.
I understand.
But I do not approve, nor would I ever approve, of a parent or a teacher describing the satisfaction you feel as a citizen when you see the hippie take the stick off the head to say, ah.
I never...
Oh, yes, you did. And Father Staley right now is laughing himself almost sick because... Isn't that what you heard, Staley? Are you listening to that?
Well, I don't know what's wrong with him.
There's nothing wrong with him. That's exactly what you did. You went on the phone And you said to all the Phil Henry listeners on the radio station now, you said you saw the hippie take the stick, and you went, ah, or something like that. And I don't approve of that. I think it sounds guttural, and I think it sounds fallacious. And I don't think it's in keeping with the standards of the faculty and the administration of Elba Academy. Hold it. You can shut it off now, Staley. Seriously. Because you're tightening my jaws. You can shut it up. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Father, I understand. I don't think there's any need for you to come on this program tonight and shut me down like I'm just... like I'm your...
Go ahead, you can say it.
Like I'm your yard bitch.
Well, tonight you're my bitch. If you want me to say it. Why don't you shut up? Tonight you're my bitch. Because tonight you disgrace Spellbar Academy in front of the parents, the teachers, and the class. You disgrace Belmar Academy to the ex-teachers and the ex-class and the alumni and all of the people that went there and got sick of it and quit and left. You disgrace this to all the people and all the children that might have even been fondled by the faculty.
So you do admit it. See, now I'm off the hook.
I'm not admitting anything on my part. No, sir, no, sir. And it's a disgrace that you... did what you did.
All right, I think we've got the idea, and I...
Well, listen, look at you trying to take over, huh?
He's been doing it all hour.
Well, I am taking over because it's my show. And I think we have the general idea, Father, and you got Father Staley there laughing his ass off. I don't know that anybody in the student body or any of the parents will take this seriously.
Well, I'm hoping that they will. And I will tell you something else. I'm dealing in the open, in the public here, with Mr. Dozier.
I feel like I'm a kid that's been standing here, some punk kid that's standing here with holding the jar of Vaseline. In other words, they said, hey, kid, you hold that because guess what? That's what I feel like.
Well, if you feel that way and you have a very disgusting way of putting things...
Boy, you sure do.
Then you brought it on yourself.
All right, hold the line here. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we are talking with Vernon Dozier and Father James McCorders from Belmar Academy over over Mr. Dozier's description of his discussion he had with his class on Occupy Oakland and how the police finally broke it up and cleared the streets. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
My yard bitch, all right.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police will be joining us next hour to discuss a young man who presents as a girl. This is the best way I can put it. He is a boy, and he has joined the Girl Scouts. We'll talk with Jay about that next hour. Our number 877-876-PHIL. On the line with me is Vernon Dozier and Father James McCorders from Belmar Academy. We're talking about how Mr. Dozier presented Occupy Oakland and the breaking up of that demonstration by Oakland police to his students. It turned into quite a contretemps. Father McCorders, how many parents complained about this?
Well, I feel I would be less than honest if I told you that we don't have, I think, a fair number of complaints on a fairly regular basis when it comes to the current affairs class that's taught by Mr. Dozier, but he has the complete confidence of the board and the rest of the faculty when he teaches these classes, because we do find him to be a very inventive teacher and very instructive teacher. But the reason why I'm on your program this evening is I felt that he had gone a bit too far in describing his own satisfaction as he saw the Oakland police lay into the demonstrators.
Now,
and another thing here, I'm not done yet, Mr. Dozier, so please. I'm not done yet, Mr. Dozier, so please, if you don't mind.
I'm not saying anything.
Well, I did hear you go, I heard some exclamatory noise.
I was scratching my leg. God.
Well, no, you were not scratching your leg, because I heard you go, it was a verbal noise.
All right, I think we've, Mr. Dozier, if you'll allow him.
Yeah, but I didn't say anything. I reached down to scratch my leg, and I went, something. I made an exclamation.
You have a habit of making exclamations when things happen, don't you?
Father,
you have a habit of making exclamations about things when things happen, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And when you saw the Oakland police cleaning all those hippies off the street, and yes, I understand they were using the street as a toilet, and yes, I understand that they were behaving and misbehaving, if you will, to the civic authorities of Oakland, and yes, I understand that the citizens and the shopkeepers and the other people didn't feel safe, and they felt that their property had been compromised. I understand all of this, but it doesn't give you the right. When you're talking to one of the parents, and you're expressing to the class your satisfaction at seeing the police act, it doesn't give you the right to go, almost like you're getting your cookies.
I did not. That's the second time someone said that to me, and I resent that. I did not go, like some...
Well, a moment ago, you said that you are my yard bitch, and I said, yes, you are. So that's how a yard bitch sounds.
So, Mr. Henry, you're a witness. You're saying now because I'm your bitch, I went,
pretty much.
You two guys really don't sound very adult now.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the way you're talking right now. It's got nothing to do with what happened in the classroom, nothing to do with the lesson that should have been taught the students, nothing to do with better communication with the parents. The two of you guys are arguing now over how a guy goes, when he's a yard bitch.
But I said he's my yard bitch because of what he done to our school. And it's gotten completely distorted now.
No, I think you distorted it.
No, both of you guys had a completely ridiculous conversation about something that shouldn't have been that tough. The Phil Henry Show, Jay Santos next.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. Going places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. A radio show that they'll never kill. They've been trying. 877-876-PHIL is our number. 877-876-7445. And certainly we are online at philhenryshow.com. We have live streaming video of our show there. We have thousands of hours of archive material there. And we've got merchandise there. If you want a Phil Henry hat, if you want a Phil Henry mug, if you want a Phil Henry shot glass, if you want a Phil Henry t-shirt, if you want a Phil Henry CD, our best of CDs between 99 and 2005 are there. And soon to arrive, we will be having and featuring downloads. That's right, classic heritage downloads of our best of material. And not only that, of course, but everything in our archives is downloadable. So it's all there at philhenryshow.com. And we're also going to have in our merchandise shop very, very shortly in time for wintertime, the new Phil Henry hoodies, baby.
Yeah, I want to get... Which ones are those?
What do you think a hoodie is, man?
Yeah, I know, but is that the one with a hood?
Did I just call it a hoodie?
Well, yeah, but... Okay.
God, man. You know what, bud? Sometimes you just want to hear yourself talk. That's it.
No, I didn't... When you said hoodie, I don't know what you meant.
Talk about a hoodie.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, hoodies. Phil Henry Show hoodies coming to our merchandise store very, very shortly. All right, 877-876-PHIL. This hour, Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police is going to be joining us. But let me get a little bit into this story before we introduce Jay. Everyone has their favorite toys, no matter what age they are. For 7-year-old Bobby Montoya, it's Bratz, Barbies, and Strawberry Shortcake. I like girl stuff, Bobby said. Bobby is a 7-year-old boy. His mother refers to him as a he, but Bobby dresses and behaves like a girl. Bobby identifies as a girl, and he's a boy, Felicia Archuleta, Bobby's mom, said. He's been doing this since he was about 2 years old. He's loved girl stuff, so we just let him dress how he wants as long as he's happy. Bobby is happy most of the time, but, he says, sometimes in school, being a boy and dressing like a girl occasionally is tough. He's been bullied. It's hurting my heart, Bobby said. It hurts me and my mom both. Recently, Archuleta wanted to sign Bobby up for Girl Scouts. His older sister did it, and Bobby really wanted to join, too. Archuleta told Channel 9 News of Denver when she brought Bobby to register, a troop leader told her Bobby couldn't join. I said, well, what's the... This is the mother talking. You know, I can't even believe this. Because right away, this mother sounds like the biggest imbecile that I've ever heard of in my life. Just a classic imbecile. First of all, you take a little boy and you sign him up for Girl Scouts and then says, what's the big deal when they say, you must have expected some pushback. Don't give me this stuff about what's the big deal. Number two, where's the father? Is there any kind of other influence besides this woman in this boy's life? I'm not saying the father would necessarily disagree with the Girl Scout selection, but I ain't heard anything here about a father. He's, what is he, seven?
Man, you got to bring on Jay Sandals and everything.
I know. So anyway, I'm finding it very difficult to maintain my composure when I hear about blooming jackballs like this. What's the big deal? Oh, I don't know. It's just precautionary. You know, he is a boy, and it's called Girl Scouts. Yeah, so? Yeah, you know what? You're right. Why am I making a big deal out of it? Life would be so much easier if I didn't make a big deal out of things like, you got to be a girl to be in the Girl Scouts. I said, what's the big deal? Said this giant brain surgeon of a mother. She said, this idiot at the Girl Scouts, it doesn't matter how he looks, he has boy parts and he can't be in Girl Scouts. That's what she said, he has boy parts. Two adult women talking to each other. It was like somebody told me, I can't like girl stuff, Bobby said. I feel so bad for you, son. Not because you can't have the girl stuff that you want, but because you're raised by the people you're being raised by. Anyway, Girl Scouts of Colorado released the following statement. Girl Scouts is an inclusive organization. We accept all girls in kindergarten through 12th grade as members. If a child identifies as a girl and the girl's family presents her as a girl, Girl Scouts of Colorado welcomes her as a Girl Scout. Our requests for support of transgender kids have grown, and Girl Scouts of Colorado is working to best support these children, these families, and the volunteers who serve them. In this case, an associate delivering our program was not aware of our approach. She contacted her supervisor, who immediately began working with the family to get the child involved. I don't believe it for 5 seconds. I don't believe it for five nanoseconds. Not the way this woman's telling the story. Excuse me for being, you know, being animate, folks. I apologize. Jay Sanders is on the line with us, the Citizens Auxiliary Police, which is a... It's a citizens' auxiliary police. They don't like to be called a volunteer police group because they consider themselves to be, quote, frontline law enforcement. Jay, good evening and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Phil, for having us on.
Before we start, I think people would like to know about the citizens' auxiliary police since you're not on every night. Tell us a little bit about it.
Certainly, Phil, very happy to do that. Citizens' auxiliary police was started in 1996 by Major Ellis Newton. Here in the South Bay area in Torrance, California. And it was started by a group of concerned citizens who felt that the police would best be served by citizens if we had a group that followed up on what the police were either investigating or were not handling perhaps as thoroughly as they should because of a manpower shortage. And that is when Citizens Auxiliary Police really got launched. And we have been doing our citizens auxiliary police work here in California. We have other organizations, whether it's the Beaver Brigade in Oregon. We have the New York Simulated Militia. We also have the West Texas Range Riders and a group of volunteer police agencies. And we've done everything from flare drops, which is our traffic control, to our line and check, which is generally asking questions of people going into movie theaters to make sure that they're not going to be unduly influenced by the violence there, listening in on conversations at restaurants. People seem to think that that's a violation of their constitutional right. It's not, because we're not telling them what to do. We're not telling them what to do. We listen in on conversations to make sure that they are not directing their conversation too heavily in one way or another. But
Well, haven't you guys been involved in a few issues relative to people's personal rights that have brought you before a magistrate or a judge more than once?
I would not say that it's brought us before a magistrate or a judge more than once. I think that we've had people who've misunderstood what we've done. There have been some civil actions, but our lawyer has, taken care of misunderstandings on the parts of some people. We're not here to eliminate people's constitutional rights, Phil. We're just here to make sure that they use those constitutional rights in a way that you should and not waste everybody's time doing it. That's You know,
well, I'm not aware of me exercising my constitutional rights and wasting somebody's time, you know.
Well, it's perhaps not the best way to put it. I apologize for that, but what we're saying is we are all about constitutional rights. We want people to have their constitutional rights within the framework of not wasting my precious energy and time and the energy and time of other citizens while you're having your rights. You see, so
no, I don't. But look, you know what you're doing.
It's a complicated. It is a constitutional issue, but we do not know. We do not, in any way, do we take away anybody's constitutional rights while we do try to enforce the safety of the neighborhood. And you can have your rights, and if you want to go out and destroy, you know, your life and make life impossible for your family, I guess you have every right to do that. So, if that's what you call exercising constitutional rights, great. Have fun.
No, that's not what I call that. That's, you know, look, let's talk about this Girl Scouts, this thing in Colorado.
Well, the situation with this young boy, my understanding is he is a 7-year-old male. His name is Bobby Archuleta. His mother took him to a Girl Scout sign-up in the Denver, Colorado area. Bobby, at that time, said he, quote, presented as a female. The mother presented him as a female. This is a term that I want you to remember, presenting ads. At that time, Bobby was then rejected because he was, in point of fact, a boy. He is biologically and anatomically and strategically a boy. And
what does that mean, strategically?
Well, I'm saying that in the way that he goes about living his life, the strategy is to be a boy. He's not going to try to be a girl, you know, because what I mean by that is sooner or later he's going to want to marry a girl and have a baby. And
you don't think he's gay?
I don't know, because just because you dress up as a girl doesn't mean you're gay, which, you know, that's almost homophobic, Phil, for you to say that. You understand that, right? You understand that there's...
Yeah, I know. I know that there are guys that are transvestites. I know that there are... But I don't know if that's the case. I didn't know you could be a transvestite at 7.
That's something we have to work out. But what is the most critical thing here, and what is the most, I think, maddening aspect to all of these stories, Phil? And this is just one of many. And hold on to me. Can I get some more volume on this telephone here?
Right, but...
Yeah, I want to get more volume. I'm in our, right now, Phil, I'm in our substation. I need more volume phone. Well, what I am worried about, Phil, more than anything else, is the abundance of these stories of a man presenting as a woman, of a woman presenting as a woman with a man's parts. Do you understand there's a woman who wants to have a baby, but she wants to look like a man? And these stories are happening more and more and more, and are confusing people so much and are troubling people so much that they're beginning to take their toll on people who are emotionally healthy and who know what they are and why they are alive. And, for instance, an individual such as myself, which some people may disagree with me or agree with me, I find myself, and I know I've talked to other men, who increasingly wonder if they should not be asking these questions of themselves. So we're living now in a time, Phil, where the sexuality and the gender of a person is up in the air, it's up for grabs. And we're trying to bring it back down to earth. That's why we want to travel to Denver, and I'm going to confront this woman, and I'm going to ask her, along with Sub-Commander Gleason, and we're also going to be bringing with Sub-Commander Johnson, as well as Major Alts Newton. And we're going to confront this woman, this Archuleta woman, and I'm going to tell her that her actions and the actions of other women like her has caused me to wonder if I'm a woman, although I know I'm not. You see?
No, I don't.
Well, I'm being very honest, and it's very cutting edge, Phil. And so don't try to make it sound like I'm a weirdo, because what we are doing is a very cutting-edge thing. We're going to go to Denver. I'm going to confront this woman. I'll say, you make me feel like I'm a woman in a man's body.
Did we lose the line?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, let's get, well, get him back on. We have Major, excuse me, we have Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. It sounded like his line just cut off. And we're going to continue talking with him about the story in Colorado of a little boy who is 7 who dresses as a girl and wants to join the Girl Scouts and has been admitted to the Girl Scouts because the Girl Scouts of Colorado have a presenting as a female policy for transgender kids. So this is a boy who already is identified as transgender. His mother took him over there, said, what's the big deal? We're talking to Jay Sanis about how this is all, how, what effect it's having on the rest of us. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show, back here with Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. We lost the connection to you, Jay. I apologize for that, but we have you back, and we're talking here about this story in Colorado of a 7-year-old boy who is a cross-dressing transgender, I guess.
We don't know, Phil. That's why I'm going to confirm and talk to this mother.
Well, you're going to go to a mother who knows her son.
Well, here is what we're going to do. We're going to request a meeting with Miss Archuleta. We're going to go to her home, and we're going to talk to her, and we're going to attempt to bring this woman to an understanding of what she's doing when she has a little boy who calls himself a woman. He is adding to. I'm not saying he's doing it, but he's adding to an already oppressive weight on not just men, Phil, but every American, because now we're all in this ridiculous place, which never should have happened, where we're asking ourselves, am I a woman? And it sounds, I know it sounds almost incomprehensible, and...
Well, I can tell you that I've never asked that question of myself.
I don't know that... It's something that I would challenge you on right here and right now. I think it's affected all of us. I think, yes, that's what you're going to say.
And well, I'm telling you the truth.
Well, Phil, I believe you think you're telling me the truth. But what I'm saying is this.
Are you saying that this is affecting all of us on some level that we're not conscious of?
No, I think that if we're honest with ourselves, and I don't think that if you say that you don't ask yourself, well, am I a man or am I a woman? What am I? When we look at all these stories of people who suddenly say, I'm not a man, I'm a woman. Well, you look like a man, and they get insulted by that. And you might be looking at a man who is 300 pounds, has a huge beard, has a lumberjack shirt on, I mean, just to make it more comic, and he will say, I'm a woman, and you'll say you don't look anything like a woman, and they will be offended by that. And you could be assaulted. You could be sued. You could. So what kind of a world are we living in now where I could get sued by a man that looks like a Hell's Angel but tells me he's a woman and he's offended by the fact that I didn't see it?
When has that ever happened?
I don't think we can afford right now, Phil, to talk about hypotheticals.
Well, I mean, I'm saying there has to, for you to fear or to say that a guy that looks like a big bearded Hell's Angel thinks he's a woman and gets offended if you call him a man, when has that happened?
I'm saying to you, Phil, we cannot afford these hypotheticals right now. If you say, when has that happened, I can tell you that is going to happen because right now I'm a man. I wonder, am I a woman, or am I a girl, or are you? I know that I'm a man, but now I'm wondering, should I be asking if I'm a man?
I don't understand that at all. You know, I just don't understand that at all.
Well, if you don't understand what I'm talking about, you're not going to be prepared for what's going on in this society, as more and more and more, we're going to have people at younger, younger ages saying, I'm presenting as a female, even though I'm a female, but I want to be a man. You know, it gets ridiculous, you know.
Well, it sounds to me like you know.
Believe me, Phil, I've been on the front lines of law enforcement now for the last 7, 8 years, and we deal with all kinds of aberrant personalities. And I've never, ever seen anything like this in the history of America, where the whole country now is people saying, "What, you know, what should I wear today? If I get up in the morning and I don't even know if I should put on pants or a skirt, don't you think that that presents some kind of a..." And I know it sounds funny. And
it sounds hysterically funny. It's not even anything that... I've never had this problem.
Well, neither have I. But I'm saying that...
But you've said that you wonder, are you a woman?
No. Yes, I have, in the context of everybody else is asking what they are. I mean, we've got a whole country full of people that don't know what they are. I can ask anybody that calls the show right now, and they may say, I'm a man, and I could say, yeah, but you may... You say that, but you probably wonder if you're a woman.
Well, I don't doubt that the person's going to say no. I've never wondered that I'm a woman. I'm a man. I don't know that anybody's going to be honest about that.
Well, that's right there is one of the problems. A lot of people are not honest about it. And I'm not saying you're not honest about it, but I am saying that I dare say, Phil, at some point in your life, if you were more honest about it, you would say, yeah, there have been days when you get out of bed and you'd rather just get back into bed because you don't know whether to go out into the world as a girl or as a guy. And
I've never had that problem ever in my life. I've gotten out of bed depressed. I've gotten out of bed not knowing what to do with my day. I've gotten out of bed some mornings where I just, you know, the world looked just far too much for me to take on that day. But I have never, ever, ever wondered whether I ought to put on a skirt or a pair of pants.
I would respectfully disagree with that.
How can you disagree with that when you weren't with me when I was getting out of bed every morning?
I didn't have to be. I'm saying the dynamic of where we are today in society is that we are getting out of bed in the morning not even sure if we're a guy or a chick. Not a chick, but you know what I'm saying.
All right, we're going to get on the line here in a moment. Jack Armstrong, who is a progressive blogger, we'll be talking with him about this, with Jay Sanos.
I'm sorry, who is this?
Oh, we have another guest coming on, Jack Armstrong, who's a progressive blogger.
I was not aware that I was going to be on with a... Am I going to debate this guy? Or?
No, not at all. I just wanted to get another point of view. Hold on, 877-876-PHIL is our number. Talking to Jay Sanos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police on a little boy who wants to join the Girl Scouts and has because he, quote, presents... as a girl. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, on the line with me, with Jay Sanos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. We're going to get Jack Armstrong in here, who is a liberal blogger, and we're going to talk about the case in Denver, Colorado. And got Jay on the line there. Jay, thank you very much for hanging with us. And I understand you have a point of view. It wouldn't make the world go round, I guess, as they say, if we didn't have, or is it, it wouldn't make a horse race if we didn't have different opinions, you know? If you're there, Jay?
I'm sorry, Phil, what'd you say about it?
I said, in other words, as my father used to say, if that's what makes a horse race, different opinions.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I understand what that refers to, but I am...
In other words, when you're at a horse race, everybody's got a different opinion about what horse they want.
All right, I guess. What I'm saying...
All right.
What I'm saying is that... Well, I don't understand what your father was trying to say, you know.
Never mind. Just what were you saying?
What I was saying is, Phil, we have had so much conversation about transgender and trans... you know, like Major Ellis Newton the other night was saying, we got transgender, we got trans World Airways, what he said, you know. There's so much transgender, I just want to call it trans world, you know, trans, you know, everything like that. Trans, Trans-Am, you know, is what he wanted to say. So, you know, I'm saying that it's confusing people. We at the Citizens Auxiliary Police believe it's confusing people to the point where now people are saying, I don't know, you know, I really don't have, I don't know where, I don't know who I am. You know, I just don't know who I am. And,
well, I, okay, so you seem to find that I...
Well, I know that you said that you don't ask who you are, and I'm not saying that I ask who or I'm not asking who I am. I mean, I'm not saying that I am asking who I am, but I do, there's been so much of it that I found myself some days asking, am I a man, or should I be a woman? And let me ask, Jerry Gleason's here, what, something to do? See, even he just said to me some days he wonders if he's a woman. So I think that this has had an impact. To what extent, I don't know. And to what, not so much extent, but to what, to how long it's going to last, I don't know either.
Okay, Jack Armstrong is going to join us here from Minneapolis, Minnesota. He is a blogger back there, has his own website. And Jack, you've heard Jay from the Citizens Auxiliary Police, and you've read this story. What do you think?
Well, first of all, Phil, thank you for having me on your program. I think it's very important that a lot of people understand what these issues are, and they're very important issues having to do with the freedom of people, I think, number one. And you've got the freedom of a family, obviously, to choose how their children are raised. There's also the freedom of the Girl Scouts of America to operate their organization as a public service organization. As they see fit, but I can tell you that I don't think that Mr. Santos or whatever his group is about, I don't think he sees clearly what is at stake here, that he's going to go back and try to tell this lady what she's going to do. Well, I'm not trying to tell her what to do, sir. I'm just simply saying that every time one of them, I think you are trying to tell her what to do. From I thought I heard that you said you was going to go back there. Yes, sir, we are. We're going to go back to Denver. Okay, and you're going to say what to the lady? Well, I'm going to say to her that your son, I think, is... your son's weird. He's weirding everybody out, going, oh, I'm seven, I'm a boy, but I want to be a girl. I want to present as a girl. I was going to present as a boy, you know? Well, I mean, when you say that he's weirding everybody out, what you're saying basically is that the kid, a little boy, is going to weird you out, even though you're the man, he's the little boy.
Yeah, that's a good point. What are you accusing a child of?
I'm not accusing a child of anything, Phil. Look, I'm a father. Are you father? Sure, I just want to ask this gentleman here, Mr. Armbruster, is it? Jack Armstrong's my name. No, sir, I'm not a father. All right, well, I think I am, and, well, I don't think, I know I am. And I can tell you that I would never want to, you know, put on a little boy, a little tiny boy, say he's weirding me out. But when... can I ask you a question? You can ask me anything you want, sir. Go right ahead. Do you ever have days where you think you're, that you want to present as a woman? Look, I'm not going to sit here and disagree with you on that. I think that the totality of what has been happening, with the, issues of transgender and how to present, I think it makes all of us wonder, are we asking the right questions of ourselves? Right. See, so Mr. Henry thought that I was cuckoo, and I was trying, you know, and I was crackers and everything. Well, Mr. Henry can think what he wants to think.
Are you saying, Jack, that you have asked this question?
I'm simply telling you, Phil, from the standpoint of a progressive and what I've seen of this world, and this issue particularly hits home because we've got an awful lot of people who are asking, "Am I a dude? What am I?" When I go out the door and I walk down the street, how do I walk? Do I want to walk in a way that a woman will find attractive, or do I want to walk in a way that a dude is going to look at? Exactly. All right? And
are you saying that?
No. If you listen to me for a minute, Phil, I'm saying that the transgender, how do we present in the world? This is the existential question. Right, but do you ever, I think Phil's asking, do you ever do that?
Right, do you do that?
Do I do what?
Do you walk, when you walk down the street, if I can get this correct, you're saying that you walk down the street.
Phil, you don't have to yell, I can hear you.
Okay. But are you saying that when you walk down the street, do I walk?
Look at what I'm telling both of you gentlemen, and I agree more with you, Phil. I don't agree that much with Jay, although I do. I here's where we're getting hung up. Yeah, I agree with Jay that we have a level of confusion in our society right now. Among men and women, we have a lot of people who are saying, you know, I'm not really a guy. I think I'm a woman. I need to put on a skirt, and I gotta get into a dress. That because that's what I am. But for the rest of us, we get so confused. I know I'm a guy. You know you're a guy, Phil. Mr. Santos, I'm sure, knows that he's a guy. But then comes these stories of transgender people who are born guys but they want to be a woman, or they're born a woman but they want to be a guy, like the Chastity Chaz Bono story. And then we get confused, and we go to the office, we go to the store, and we don't know how to hold ourselves. We don't know whether we should scratch it or buy, I don't know, feminine hygiene. Let me give you an example of...
This is asinine conversation, you know.
Well, please, Phil, listen to the gentleman, because there's a lot of horse sense in what he's got to say.
A lot of horse sense? You know...
Let me tell you a story, Phil, and this is a true story. It's happening more and more. Guy goes to the store, he goes and he buys for his wife, he got her some Midol or this pain medicine for a woman's pains, you know, for the once a month. He comes back with a number of items for himself. One of them was feminine hygiene spray. When his wife said, "What's that?" he said, I bought it in case I need it. And when she said, "What do you mean in case you need it?" he said, three guesses. The first two don't count, because he was trying to be a smartass. But he was being very...
Oh, come on. Come on.
Come on about what?
What do you mean he bought feminine hygiene spray for himself?
In other words, you get to the store, you're so confused by the news of the day. You know, there's an awful lot, if I could just... go ahead. There's an awful lot of news stories that are out there right now of a guy that wants to be a woman. And
yes, you guys have made that abundantly clear. And you've said that because of that abundance of news stories, the rest of us are confused.
Well, yes.
Okay. I'm not... You're telling me you got a friend that went to the store and bought FDS.
I don't know what brand it was, but it was feminine hygiene spray, yeah. I'll tell you from my own experience. I will go down the street, and all of a sudden I want to take shorter strides. Should I be stepping like a woman? Should I take shorter strides like I'm going to be in a high heel or something like that, you know? And these are common things, Phil, and I think that to keep an open mind about it. You know?
Well, I don't know what kind of an open mind I'm going to keep about something like that. To keep an open mind about what? To keep an open mind about what?
If you're going down the street and you find yourself taking a shorter stride,
what am I supposed to think?
Well, I would tell us, Jay.
Yeah. What am I supposed to think?
I would think if you are more comfortable taking a shorter stride, like a little bitty stride, and all of a sudden, you're wondering how your ass looks.
That I'm a chick?
No, I didn't say a chick. No, we're talking about that you want to present like one.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you believe me if I told you that I've never wanted to take shorter strides or wonder how my ass looked? I mean, not in that sense.
Well, in what sense?
Not as a chick, okay? I've never wanted to take shorter strides or wondered, you know, what do you mean by...
Did you ever wonder if your ass was too big?
No, I never did.
Well, Phil, I can tell you there are those of us who want to be honest about this and move this along and move this conversation we're having with ourselves along. There's people, you know.
Yeah, and I'm not being honest, and I'm not moving the conversation along. I think you guys are misreading the story here. I haven't seen or heard of anybody questioning whether they're a guy or whether they're a woman. As far as this story goes in Colorado... I'd like to find out exactly what you find out when you go there, Jay. There's something about this is fishy, because this woman...
Would you say there's something about this that is fishy right there?
No, not right there. This mother sounds like she's full of crap. Nobody goes with a little boy to a Girl Scout sign-up and the little boy is dressed as a girl, and you don't walk in there all nonchalant and say, yeah, hi, I want to sign my boy up. And when the woman has a very understandable reaction to that, you say, what's the big deal? Look, lady, you may think your son belongs in the Girl Scouts, and maybe he does, but nobody, nobody reacts that way.
I think, Phil, if you come from a world where you don't know in the morning whether you're supposed to put on panties or not, and
whatever world that is that your world?
No, sir, that is not my world. No, sir, that is not my world.
Okay. None of you guys, that what we've been talking about, you guys don't know this world, so I don't think...
We're going to go to Denverville. We're going to talk to Mrs. Archuleta.
And what are you going to say to her?
We're going to say to her that you have got to use your influence and the influence you got with other mothers that may have a little boy that wants to, you know, do this. Would you please back it off, you know, turn it down a couple of notches? Because you're driving me crazy, and you've got a lot of people wondering what they are.
Well, good luck. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be back. We have our News and Information Hour coming up.
World-famous Phil Henry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show here. Welcome back. Secrets of long life sought in DNA of the elderly. George Eberhardt turned 107 last month, and scientists would love to know how he and other older folks like him made it that far. So he's going to hand over some of his DNA. He's one of 100 centenarians, I think that's what it says.
What's that?
A guy that's lived to be 100. Taking part in a project announced on Wednesday that will examine some of the oldest citizens with one of the new... Let me tell you how people get to be that old, okay? This is just my philosophy. Well, I better not say it.
No, come on, say it now. You got to say it now.
I think people live to be very old because they're selfish.
You're going to get in trouble. Oh, yeah, right. You know how much trouble you're going to get in now?
I don't care if I get into trouble. I think people live to be really old because they're selfish. Yeah, there's a reason why we have a saying, only the good die young. Now, that's not necessarily true, only the good die young. But people that spend a good part of their lives doing for other people, they don't live a long time. They don't live a long time. And I haven't, and this is going to be a horrible thing to say, and if I live to be over 100 years of age, I hope I live to make a liar out of myself. Let me put it that way. But people live to be over 100 years of age because the only thing they gave a damn about in their whole lives was themselves.
You ever know anybody over 100?
Yes, I have. I have known people over 100. I'm not going to say who, but I went to somebody's 100th birthday party once. She was the grandmother of someone that I knew, let's put it that way. And she was the most unlikable woman I'd ever met in my life. She was and the stories about her that the family had told were true. She was selfish. She was constantly bitching and moaning and whining about how she didn't get this and didn't get that, and the family didn't treat her this way and family didn't treat her that way. And when I was talking to her, I was very interested in her story, because she'd come over from Germany in the 20s when she was a very young woman, and she came over to help out a brother who had become a priest, and she moved from Germany to the United States and went to St. Paul, Minnesota, where her brother was working as a priest, and she took a job in the house that the priests lived in, where her brother lived, as a washerwoman, as a cook, as the all-around, you know, I don't know, Girl Friday or something, or whatever you want to call her, of this house. And
yeah, that shows she cared about her brother and stuff.
Well, what I'm telling you is it was a very interesting story. So she moved, eventually she moved to Chicago, which is where she met her husband, the grandfather of this grand clan that I was sharing this birthday with. And, of course, I was there with the granddaughter. I was there with the son, who was a great guy, and himself now in his senior years. And the rest of the cousins, all these people. And she's talking about how she came to America. And I came from Germany, you know. And I said, now, all I did, I very innocently asked, I said, now, when you left Germany, and I knew she left Germany in the 20s, which means that she left Germany at a time when there was great economic deprivation. There was a terrible, terrible, terrible time in Germany in the 1920s. There was, the economy was shot to hell. The old German Empire was done. The Kaiser was on the run. They were trying to make a democracy go of it, what they called the Weimar Republic. And they were having a very tough time. They were a defeated nation in war. And I asked her, did you see the Nazis at that? Did you see them on the streets? Were they evident? Were they... There were no Nazis when I was there. No Nazis at all when I was in jail. You know, and I'm like, well, you know. And she was struggling to keep her teeth in.
She tried her teeth were falling out?
I distinctly remember her pushing her teeth up, yeah. I said, I just kept my mouth shut, you know. She didn't look like she would have too much patience with me anyway. I looked like probably one of those guys that's got, he's asking too many questions, this smart ass, you know. I think they have to take that into consideration here, though. How old was your grandmother when she died, Robert?
Well, I never knew my grandmother.
Well, you never knew your grandmother?
No, I mean, my mother did.
Oh, that you live with your aunt. That's right. So you never knew your grandmother?
No, I didn't. But I heard she lived to be like 90, 91 or 80... 91 or 88.
91 or 88.
What's that mean, 91 or 88?
That's how old she was when she died.
91 or 88.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Does that mean she's a selfish bitch?
Hey, shut up, man. About what time your grandmother died?
What do you mean, what time? I don't know, probably 1:30.
No, I mean, what? How old was she?
I don't know.
Well, look, let's not call anybody a bitch here, okay? I didn't mean to say anything, and I don't really know that necessarily holds for all people. I'm saying that I find it in the people that I've known who are of the advanced years that we're talking about, the so-called centenarians, I don't think you live very long when you are living your life in the service of, or when you have a lot of contact with other human beings. I think it's a misnomer. I realize they say that married men, for instance, live longer because, and married people live longer. Because one of the reasons they say married people live longer is because that when you wake up in the middle of the night and you're worried about something, you actually have somebody there to talk to. And you're not pacing the floor, maybe smoking cigarettes, you know.
Yeah, probably drinking you some booze or something.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But that's not living alone. And that's certainly not living your life exclusively for yourself. You're living your life, you have a partner, a mate, and probably kids. And I've seen it happen a million times, we all have, where parents work themselves to death raising kids, or people who have involved themselves with other people become a part of their lives. And all of the risks as well as the rewards of life with another person or living your life in service of other people come into play. When you're by yourself and the only thing you give a damn in life is about yourself and the only person you're taking care of is yourself, man, you are the most selfish person in the world and the only thing you care about is your own survival.
So in other words, all old people are selfish.
Not all of them, but...
One's over 100.
Yeah, the one's over 100. We'll be back in the world-famous Phil Henry Show with our News and Information Hour coming up. Thank you.
Phil Henry.
I'm just saying, I don't know whether we're...
From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Welcome back to world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. This is our News and Information Hour. On the line with me here. Not on the line.
In a studio.
In the studio is Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Oh, by the way, behind me, if you're watching Phil TV in HD, let me just give you a look at this picture that's behind me. Well, wait a second, I did the wrong. Here is the picture that's behind me. This is a picture, the one that I talked so often about, of Ken Anderson and, of Ken Anderson and a guy by the name of Keith Grady, I think, who was a rookie with the Pittsburgh Steelers at the time. And this was the famous photo I was talking about of Ken Anderson getting his head pulled almost 180 degrees around to, straight back. Now, as I look at the photograph again, you can see that his head is not quite 180 degrees pulled back, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, well, look, it looks like the back of his head is where his face ought to be.
Yes, the back of his head is where his face ought to be, which is not where your face ought to be.
Yeah, but you can see, like, it ain't totally around the back because that's like his ear.
Well, what it was it was pulled. You know, I can actually turn my head that far, but I think the cameraman caught it just before it was a full 180-degree yank, because he did have to leave the game with strained neck muscles that could not have felt good. So that was that photograph that we put on our website. I don't know why I keep obsessing over that. What's my problem?
I don't know. What is that?
I don't know. It was a photograph that I remembered, and then I said, gee, I remember that photograph. Where is it? And then I couldn't find it. But, of course, all I had to do was send out the word on Twitter and elsewhere, and I got it. All right, our top story, Jennifer Aniston is gaining weight.
What?
I don't know, but I mean, why not? She doesn't sound happy about having to shoot down celebrity buzz about her personal life, but Jennifer Aniston is setting the record straight. Jennifer Aniston gave Britain's Hello magazine the lowdown, saying, "Rumor number one, I am not planning to get married anytime soon. This ring that I'm wearing is not an engagement ring. I've been married once, and I don't know if I'll get married again, but I can tell you that at this very moment, as of today, I have no plan to get married. Got that? Question mark." And she was grabbing the guy by the lapels and screaming into his face, and he said, "Yes, Mom, I've got..." Then she continued, "Okay, and rumor number two, hey, you, hey, come here," she said. "And rumor number two, no, we're not pregnant. It's just I quit smoking, so I've gained a couple of pounds. All right, maybe more than a couple of pounds. All right, so maybe my ass is about six axe handles across. What's it to you, you limey gay man," she said. So not pregnant and not getting married anytime in the near future that I'm aware of. You see? Question mark. All it takes to get the truth is to ask me. But Hello Magazine said, "No, that's not good enough for us, Miss Aniston. We still are going to float some lies and rumors about you because it's much more fun and what our readers expect from the rumor mill. Thank you, Hello Magazine." Usmagazine.com notes that as recently as the summer of 2010, yoga-loving Aniston was a pack-a-day smoker. Do we think she's quit? Not on your life. And her ass proves it. All right. No, I don't know what...
What part of that was true?
It's all true, and she was talking to Hello Magazine in Britain. She was pretty butch.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like she got right up in that guy's face. I mean, whoever the reporter was.
Well, she's obviously tired of having these rumors about her life and about her, and she's tired of she's just tired of having a life, I think, you know.
Yeah, well, she didn't want to have people think her butt got big on account of. That's like Kirstie Alley. Remember when they did that?
Oh, man. The Kirstie Alley, if you saw the picture of her, did you ever see the time she was trying to put the burrito down?
Well, I saw it. I mean, those are very unfortunate. Those are terrible pictures to publish and terribly cruel.
No, but the burrito shot's what we're saying.
Yeah.
I don't know any burrito shot.
Oh, man. You didn't see the time she had the heel of her hand on the end of a burrito and she's like, ah.
Yeah. Like, you can't get a burrito in deep enough? God, man, why don't you call up probably Roto-Rooter and they can rooter it down? Yeah.
I don't know what you guys are talking about, and I didn't see any picture where she was using the heel of her hand to shove a burrito down her throat. God.
Yeah, she did.
I did see some photographs that were very cruel. And,
Well, would it be cruel, man? I mean, if she's eating like that and she's living like that, why can't they have a picture of that?
I think that there's no rule. It's I guess you can if you want to. But it just, you know, people go through these periods. It's too bad, I guess, as a celebrity, if you have a period of where you're having a tough time controlling your weight, it's just too bad that there are people lurking around every corner with a camera because Kirstie Alley, there were some pictures taken of her that were just unbelievable, just like Marlon Brando.
Yeah, Marlon Brando one time, he went and got toilet paper. He had a big picture and everything.
Yeah, the guy, they had him, what'd they have?
Yeah, he was buying, like, or I think he was buying maybe 100 rolls of toilet paper like he never He needed all that to wipe his butt or something?
Yeah.
No, he didn't, man. It was a picture of him out in front of a Costco or something.
Yeah, but he's buying toilet paper.
I don't know what he was buying, bud. What is it with you guys? What is it with people, man? Why do we love to see the imminent downfall of it? What is it about Americans? And this is not a unique thing to this age. This is something that Charles Dickens himself, who you guys don't know who he is, right?
Well, yeah, didn't he do
was it Oliver Copperfield?
No, Oliver Twist.
Yeah, David Twist. David Copperfield.
David Copperfield, Oliver Twist. Charles Dickens wrote, when he came to America, and he was here in the 1850s, he, even then, made note in a book he wrote called American Notes. He said, one thing about Americans is they love to build their idols up just to tear them down. This seems to be something, it was unique to the American character, enough so that this writer from England, Charles Dickens, made note of it. That we love to build up our heroes just to tear them down. It might be, back then, it might have been a function of our recent emancipation from the monarchy. So that we could just sort of toy with this kind of civilian celebrity and monarchy. We could just toy with a regular citizen king and queen and then just pull them down. And we've inherited that instinct from that generation of Americans. And it's changed over time, but we still have this basic instinct that as soon as somebody gets big enough, we decide, okay, pull the plug. And just watch them fall, you know.
I don't know. I don't understand any of that.
You start talking like that, man, you lose me too.
Okay, well, that's fine. But the good news is that you guys kept your mouth shut through all of that and let me actually say something instead of you, bud, butting in with something like, what do you mean about that?
I didn't say nothing.
I know. I'm thanking you for that. So how did we get on this? Oh, yeah, fat people. So I think that the Kirstie Alley photographs and the Marlon Brando photographs are unfortunate, you know.
Who's another fat guy?
Yeah. Tell us about fat people you've known.
Fat people I've known?
Well, no, not known, but like that was in the news.
Well, Orson Welles was a big story.
Who's he?
Orson Welles was a movie director and an actor, but mostly a director. He was best known for a movie he did when he was in his 20s called Citizen Kane. He was only, I don't know, I guess 27 or 28 when he made it. It is considered to be a great American film. Like so many so-called great American films, there are a lot of people wondering why. Not a lot of people saw Citizen Kane when it first came out. I suppose over the years a lot of people have seen it. I've seen it. I think it's a fine movie. Is it the greatest movie I've ever seen? Of course it isn't. But then again, neither are some movies that were recently made. So it's a good movie, but it sort of made Orson Welles' reputation. And he's also the guy, bud, you'll like this. He did a radio broadcast once where he said Martians were landing and some farmers believed him.
You kidding? That's kind of like what you do.
He did War of the Worlds on the radio.
Yeah, I heard about that, man. People thought a Mars man landed. They're going to go try and shoot him.
You're kidding me.
No, man, they did. And they had farmers coming out with a shotgun.
Yeah, there were people that thought Martians had landed.
That's bitching. So so what happened?
Well, it made the news the next day, and people were, oh, wow, Orson Welles with the radio broadcast, Martians. And that was it. And they introduced some new rules saying that you have to disclaim shows more often. They actually did disclaim that broadcast. That's people who don't think that they did are wrong, because they did say that this is a presentation, a dramatic theatrical presentation, blah, 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 boom. And they did this whole number, and it sounded real enough to some of the people in listening that they went out and got their shotguns, and they were waiting for a Mars man to come and eat them up.
Yeah, that is so great. Did they kill anybody, or did they shoot nobody or anything?
No, they didn't shoot nobody, right?
No, they didn't shoot anybody.
Did the cops shoot anybody?
No, the cops didn't shoot anybody. What happened was is just a lot of scared people called. And I think they got a photograph of some farmer coming out from around a barn with a shotgun. So that was the picture that everybody remembers of the... that was Orson Welles. He was really fat. There was a singer when I was a kid named Mama Cass Elliott.
She's the one with a ham sandwich. I remember about that.
She choked on it, right?
No, that's bullcrap. That never happened. And that's another one of those really nasty things that people started because somebody didn't like her, and they decided to, you know, say something nasty. She didn't choke on a ham sandwich. She died of some kind of an ailment. She was a young woman. She was heavy, but she didn't go the way they said, and it was a very unfortunate thing to say. You know, I mean, that's that her legacy, her life is tainted by some stupid rumor like that because somebody didn't like her.
I don't think, Ben, but I'm just telling a joke.
I know, but it makes her sound like she was a fat pig or something.
Well, wasn't she?
No, man, just because she's overweight doesn't mean she's shoveling a ham sandwich into her puss morning, noon, and night.
Well, I didn't say that. You could still choke on a piece of lean, thin ham or something. What, you got some lean ham, like fatty ham?
What about fatty ham?
If you don't cut the fat out, man, you choke on a lean piece.
Yeah, I got your lean piece.
Shut up, will you? You guys are real asses, you know that?
I didn't do anything.
Yeah, when you're making fun about somebody dying, don't start making jokes about how they choked on a ham sandwich. That woman, Mama Caselli, she was a great singer. She was in a great group. And her legacy should be much more respectful than that. But for some reason, somebody decided to float a rumor about her choking on a ham sandwich. They thought it was funny. And so now, how would you like that, bud? How would you like it if somebody said that you died with a gerbil wedged?
You're lying about that.
Yeah, I'm going to stop that rumor.
No, you're not.
Yeah, look at you, man, getting all upset about that, huh?
Well, it's not true.
Well, neither was the ham sandwich. So watch what you say about people, man, because, you know, they may start saying the same things about you. Bud Dickman dies with a gerbil wedged.
Better not.
I'm not going to say anything, but you can see how those things hurt.
I'll bet it hurt, man. You'd have to probably take a...
Shut up!
All right. We'll be right back here. 877-876-PHIL. This is our news and information hour. And the latest headline, Bud Dickman dies with a gerbil. I'm joking. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com for all of you who are so inclined. If you go over to our website, you can check out the live video that we have going right now of our show. It is our live video cast, and we also have, of course, hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, thousands of hours of archived audio. God, how I wish I watched the World Series, man, because I just don't.
Yep.
And I know you guys don't either, so don't tell me that you do.
I watch football.
That's what I watch. I'm not watching baseball no more, man. I used to watch baseball all the time. Baseball used to be, well, it was. I played it in school, and the Dodgers were my team, and I, you know, I was a baseball fan, but I don't watch the World Series anymore. It bores me to tears. Baseball bores the hell out of me. And that's where that's at. St. Louis Cardinals manager Tony La Russa leaned back against the wall outside his office on Tuesday, closed his eyes, and still couldn't let it go, replaying the scene over and over. That will go down to my house of horrors, La Russa said. Cardinals' blown communication on the bullpen phone in Game 5 of the World Series resulted in the wrong relievers warming up and entering the game and played a role in the Texas Rangers turning a 2-2 tie into a 4-2 win, leaving the Cardinals trailing 3-2 in the series. That's something that's never happened to me before. Never, said La Russa, who has managed in the majors 33 years, ranking third on the all-time victory list and second with 68 postseason victories. I guarantee you it'll never happen again. Now, there's a guy. How many times have you heard me say in the last several years, that's never happened to me before in the 30-some years that I've worked in radio?
You've said a lot.
Right. And I bet you guys thought I was... Here's a guy, 33 years. This guy has been in the major leagues. He's managed in the major leagues for 33 years. And a first for him happened in this, the 33rd year. They didn't communicate properly with their bullpen. Now, you would think that that's a basic thing in baseball, but stuff happens. Only in this instance, it cost him a World Series game.
That's like Tommy Lasorda going, it's yesterday, it's a different... Or it's almost said the F word.
Yeah, watch it, bud, okay?
Yeah, they can dump it.
I don't... Hey, whoa, hold on.
Yeah, we get all set, and they can hit the dump.
Whoa, hold on for a minute. That doesn't give you guys carte blanche to say any word you want because somebody's on the dump button. You understand?
I didn't mean to say it.
Then watch your language. Anyway, yeah, you're right. Miscommunication. But the Tommy Lasorda thing you're talking about is completely different. That's him pulling a pitcher from the game. That's not a miscommunication.
Yeah, the miscommunication, we put him in the game in the first place.
Maybe. Anyway, right-hander Octavio Dotel opened the eighth inning but gave up a leadoff double to Michael Young. La Russa said he immediately called his bullpen and said, get the left-hander going. Have the right-hander, Mott, play catch. So he wanted his left-hander, Mark Repchinski, up and going. He wanted that lefty throwing, and he wanted the right-hander catching, his right-handed pitcher catching, Jason Mott. The bullpen coach, struggling to hear over the crowd noise, heard Repchinski, but he didn't hear the thing about Mott. I shouldn't have paused between the requests, La Russa said. There was too long a pause there. So they brought in the wrong reliever, or no, the Dotel struck out Adrian Beltre for the first out, and the Cardinals pitching coach, Dave Duncan, ordered him to intentionally walk Nelson Cruz. La Russa went to the mound. He brought in Repchinski to face left-handed outfielder David Murphy, but La Russa never looked out to the bullpen to check if Mott was warming up. He retreated to the dugout, and he said, get Mott going. Does anybody understand this?
No, I understand it. Mr. Hall's going to call.
What do you mean Mr. Hall's going to call?
Because you don't know what you're talking about again.
Yeah, I don't understand either. You're making it boring, man.
What do you mean I'm making it boring?
You don't even know what you're talking about, man.
Get Mr. Hall's on the phone.
You know something? You called him up, didn't you?
No, but he didn't call me up. I called up as soon as I heard you butchering that. You don't even know what you're talking about, so why are you even doing that story?
I thought I knew what I was talking about.
You thought you knew what you were talking about. You can't even pronounce the names of these pitchers.
Well, you tell me what happened.
I don't know what happened. I didn't watch the game either. You're right. Who watches the World Series? Nobody. Only baseball fans, and even they don't get it. Something happened where they brought the wrong guy in. That's fine. That's fascinating. So what? You'd have to be a stone baseball fan to care.
Well.
Move on to something else, will you? Every time you get... What? Yeah. Yeah, give me a bottle of Diet Coke, will you? Every time you get on these topics.
It was a baseball story, so I thought I should do it.
Well, don't do it if you don't know what you're talking about. And you don't know what you're talking about, so don't do it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling me up and embarrassing me, okay?
I just heard you ripping the guys because the levels were wrong. So I'm ripping you. Do a better story. In fact, I don't want you doing any more baseball stories because nobody cares about baseball. You don't know how to talk about baseball. I don't want to hear about baseball. Bud and Robert don't know how to talk about baseball. Baseball is only liked by baseball fans, and there's fewer and fewer of those every year. So just don't do any more baseball stories, and you'll be fine.
But what if something really, you know, exciting happens?
Don't do any more baseball stories, and you'll be fine. Haul out.
Haul out.
Yeah, that's what you've been saying lately.
Haul out. All right, no more baseball stories. That's fine with me. But if anything really interesting happens, which I, well, maybe it will, I don't know. So there's a rain delay. So that's the World Series. All right. We had a discussion about the riot squads that were clearing the streets in Oakland, California. They've also cleared the streets in Atlanta. Overnight, the scenes in Oakland were chaotic with officers firing tear gas and beanbag rounds over 3 hours as protesters tried to reestablish a tent camp outside City Hall that they had been evicted from earlier. Officials complained about what they described as deteriorating safety, sanitation, and health issues. Acting Police Chief Howard Jordan told reporter, I wanted to read Howard Johnson because of the...
Hotel.
Exactly. Howard Jordan told reporters at a late-night news conference that authorities had no other choice, saying the protesters were throwing rocks and bottles. So they took a PR-24, busted some heads, and got them off the street. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. famous Phil Henry Show.
Eight seven seven eight seven six. Phil, welcome back here to our marvelous, marvelous show. And here's a really funny thing. A woman's walk reveals how frequently she has orgasms during sex. Now, I don't know, really, whose business that is. Do you?
Well, what about, like, a guy?
What do you mean, like a guy? Whose business is it how many orgasms a woman has during sex? Now, some guys may get off on the information, but if you really want to be, and that's what young men do. You know, a guy, if you're a kid, you, rather than, you know, being sexually active with a woman, which maybe they're not, they want to guess how many orgasms a woman. So this is information that, like, young males would want. Trained sexologists, if that in fact is an actual pursuit, can know the history of a woman's vaginal orgasm just by observing the way she walks, according to a new study. Trained sexologists, what's that?
That's somebody, that's, you know...
That's what?
Study sex.
I don't even think there's such a thing. I think it's some stupid-ass title that some people give themselves. Maybe some therapists or psychologists, you know. So they can know a history of a woman's, quote, vaginal orgasm just by observing the way she walks. You understand we're getting into terms here? I'm not even sure I'm allowed to talk about this stuff on the air.
Well, you're into it now, man.
Might as well keep going.
The study led by Stuart Brody of the University of West of Scotland. Here goes another British study. These Brits, man. In collaboration with colleagues in Belgium, oh, now that really doubles it up, was carried out on 16 female Belgian university students.
That cinches it right there.
Yeah, so you've got Belgian and Scottish scientists and Belgian women. That can only mean one thing. All the results are bullcrap.
How do you know?
I don't know. I'm just guessing. I'm making a joke. All right. The participants completed a questionnaire on their sexual behavior and were then videotaped from a distance while walking in a public place. Are you kidding me? The videotapes were then rated by two professors of sexology. This has got to be a degree that you get in Britain. And two research assistants trained in the functional sexological approach. See, this is a bullcrap story if I ever heard one, man. It was found that the appropriately trained sexologist could correctly infer vaginal orgasm through watching the way the women walked over 80% of the time. Also, on further analysis, it was discovered that the sum of stride length and... First of all, folks, I don't even know that I can actually read this on the air without having some radio station use it as an excuse to drop our show or to have some other ass bother me about the content of the show, right? That's number one. Number two, I don't even think the science exists that they're basing this on. Number three, this is from a news source called News Commando, which I've never heard of and which most likely sucks. Number four, there was a major news source for this, the Chicago Sun-Times, but the individual that sent me the story said, quote, it was too poorly written to use. That's probably because they wrote it properly, meaning they didn't cite a whole lot of the information because it's questionable information. Number four, again, the science is from Great Britain, which, when it comes to this kind of stuff, the science is always questionable. Number five, Belgians. Okay. I'm just kidding. All right. So anyway, so these guys are sitting there watching these women walk, and they realize how many orgasms they can have, you know?
Well, how do they know?
I don't know. They're trained sexologists, so they must know what the hell's going on. They are trained in the functional sexological approach to sexology. The functional sexological approach to sexology. Who had no idea about the woman's orgasmic history. Well, how about that? It was found that the appropriately trained sexologist could correctly infer vaginal orgasm through watching the way the woman walked.
Yeah, you can tell that way easier.
How?
If they walk bull-legged.
Another, what do you mean if they walk? Get out of here if they walk bull-legged.
Well, I mean, he's got a point.
No, he ain't got a point. Over 80% of the women walk bull-legged. I mean the... over 80% of the time, on further analysis, it was discovered that they were full of crap and they didn't know what they were looking at. They'd been drinking too much.
Slapped on a beer goggle.
They had on beer goggles, and every woman looked like she was multi-orgasmic. No, it was discovered that the sum of stride length and vertebral rotation was greater for the vaginally orgasmic woman. You understand when they say vaginal orgasm, they're just talking about one kind. There's another kind.
What kind?
I'm not going to say. I'm not a doctor, and if I start talking about orgasms, you know...
You start talking about orgasm what, man? A lot of guys want to know what you know, Henry. Now, come on, man.
Shut up. No, I can't. And the other thing is that this is stuff that you can only talk about if you have Dr. Drew sitting with you, man. And Dr. Drew, he ain't about to make the trip over to our studio anytime soon.
You can get another doctor or something like that.
I ain't going to do any of that. What do you think this is, love line? I ain't going to do that, man. I'm not going to be the second guy to rip off poor man. Anyway, besides vaginally orgasmic women may feel more confident about their sexuality, which might be reflected in their gait. So in other words, a woman who has a great many orgasms walks with a purposeful man-like stride, swinging her arms and just, yeah.
Is that what it said?
No. But I mean, that's what it sounds like. It's like the chicks that are having a lot of orgasms. It's like, hey, what's up, man? Walking down the street. Anyway, blocked pelvic muscles, which might be associated with psychosexual impairments, could both impair vaginal orgasmic response and gait, Brody said. But then Brody, who was also the sheriff of Amity when the shark attacked and is now a sexologist because he didn't get eaten.
Really?
I'm kidding. What do you mean, really, man?
Oh, man. You think that guy exists?
Well, that, I don't know.
Yeah, Sheriff Brody quit and became a sexologist in Scotland. Brody, after shoving that canister into the shark's face, blowing the shark into sushi, swimming back to shore, quitting, divorcing his wife, and moving to New York, picked up a hooker and lived with a stripper, and then moved to Scotland and became a sexologist. That's what I think Sheriff Brody did, by the way.
Wait, what? He blowed the shark up.
Yeah, I know he blowed the shark up, but I think after he did that, he swam back to shore and he said to his wife, you know what? Screw this. Screw all of you. He threw the badge on the mayor's desk, right? Got into his car and drove back to New York and packed whatever the crap he had there and moved to Scotland. Did you ever read the book?
What?
Jaws?
No, why?
Good point. There is no reason. In the book, and I may be blowing something for people, but in the book Jaws, the young marine biologist played by Richard Dreyfuss has an affair with Sheriff Brody's wife. So in Peter Benchley's novel, there's this whole sexual relationship between Sheriff Brody's wife and the Richard Dreyfuss character in the movie that didn't happen in the movie. And why did it not happen in the movie? Because it wasn't needed in the movie. It would have been a needless distraction in the movie. It wouldn't have made any sense in the movie. It would have made all of us throw up in the movie. And it probably would have ensured the failure of the movie. Do you imagine that? Richard Dreyfuss, what is that about? But the book was heavier and a bunch of other BS. But I think probably in the book, Sheriff Brody should have just paddled back to shore and said, by the way, you slept with my wife. Actually, what he should have done is fed... What's the guy's name?
His name was Hooper. I remember the captain quit. Hooper!
Yeah, Hooper! Get me another barrel, Hooper!
Yes. I think in the movie, Captain... what the hell's the guy? Brody, he should have... after the shark ate Captain Quint, Brody should have said to Hooper, oh, by the way, Hooper... You're having sex with my wife? You're next. And then head first right into the shark's mouth.
Get a shark and a snack.
Yeah, here's something else for you, shark. This guy that was sleeping with my wife. Only you don't see, like, remember when Quint went in feet first? The only thing you see dangling out of the shark's mouth are Hooper's boots.
Man, that ain't funny.
No, it's not funny. It's not funny at all, but it's not supposed to be funny. It's supposed to warn Hooper. Anyway, the study has linked vaginal... Are we back on this vaginal orgasm? The study has linked vaginal orgasm to better mental health. The study provides some support for assumptions of a link between muscle blocks and sexual function, according to the authors of... Bullcrap! There you go.
Buck, come you don't have an open mind about that, man. You're really kind of a prude about that.
Yeah, I've noticed that, man. Why?
Prude about what?
About talking about stuff like that.
I just don't understand why. I'm telling you, man, the obsession that we have with sex is way over the top. It's way, way, way over the top. And we have taken so much of the fun out of it. We've taken so much of the joy out of it. Everybody's an expert. And a lot of people, what I find, there's a lot of young men especially, they use sexual prowess or sexual conquest as a alternative to actually going out and doing something with their life. In other words, if they're screwing a lot of women, if they have sex with thousands of women, somehow that's an accomplishment. That's an achievement, you know?
Well, what do you mean?
I mean that all they do is have sex with women, and the next thing you know, they don't have a life. You know, they're just a slob doing nothing with their lives. So I think that there's nothing wrong with being a man, and there's nothing wrong with being a woman, and there's nothing wrong with sex, but sex, as in the act, is fun, but people running their yaps about it all the time is really a turnoff. Just blah, 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 you know, about this, that, and something else. And now we're supposed to know how many orgasms, a vaginal orgasm, that is, that a woman has by the way she walks. And Bud here thinks it's all you got to do is see if she walks bull-legged. I had to belt you just for that.
I didn't. Just a joke.
Yeah.
Well, how do you think a woman had a lot of orgasm? That thing said she's walking purposeful, all that.
Yeah, that study made it sound like if a woman walks like she's a dude, she has a lot of orgasms. This stride, she's got this big, long stride. All right, I'm on my way down to the, store today. All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with more in our news and information hour. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. We're giving away a free month of Phil coming up at the end of the month. And if you'd like to listen to a free sample of our radio show tomorrow, you can listen to the stream of our show at philhenryshow.com. We'll be right
Truth
back.
He's our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here, our news and information hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. And this is really disturbing. Five New York Police Department officers smuggled firearms and slot machines they thought were stolen, and some even used bolt cutters to pilfer hundreds of boxes of cigarettes from tractor trailers as part of a 12-person theft ring that was under federal surveillance the entire time, according to authorities on Tuesday. Three retired NYPD officers and a New Jersey corrections officer are among the other defendants named in a federal criminal complaint alleging an undercover agent paid them more than $100,000 to moonlight as gun runners while under FBI surveillance. Let me say that again.
Yeah, it sounds like they were paid to be under surveillance.
Now, three retired NYPD officers and a New Jersey correction officer are among other defendants named in a federal criminal complaint alleging an undercover agent paid them more than $100,000 to moonlight as gun runners while under federal surveillance. Okay. So, in other words, they were stung. Three current officers are also participated in a brazen theft of cigarettes they were told were worth $500,000. Mayor Michael Bloomberg has long targeted illegal smuggling of guns into the city and said that if the accusations are true, the officials engaged in a disgraceful and deplorable betrayal of the public trust. The men were eager and willing to smuggle the weapons and commit other crimes so long as the price was right. U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara said at a news conference...
What is that?
It sounds like he's an Indian American. It's P-R-E-E-T, Preet. Sounds Indian or Thai.
I never heard about that.
Oh, give it a rest, bud. It's a cat's name, okay? Preet Bharara.
Preet Bharara? Sure his name ain't Pete.
No, it's Preet. P-R-E-E-T.
Yeah, they probably ought to make it Pete, though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, make it Pete.
No, he doesn't want to make it Pete. He doesn't want to anglicize it, okay?
Well, he should.
I'm not going to talk about it right now. Preet Bharara said at a news conference announcing the arrest. What are you making a face now?
Just don't understand it.
Get out of here. Announcing the arrests Arresting fellow law enforcers in a corruption case is a heartbreaking thing, he said. The arrests come amid speculation that other NYPD officers could be facing less serious criminal charges in a separate investigation of ticket fixing in the Bronx. Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly said the new case involving officers assigned in Brooklyn has no connection to the Brooklyn probe. He also defended the reputation of America's largest police department. The defendants were to appear in court later, yada, yada, yada. They say every 20 years there is a scandal in the New York City police. And I'm telling you, I believe the a new one has arrived, because they had in 1950, there was a big scandal in the NYPD. I forget the name of it. In 1970 was the Serpico thing. In 1990, there was another one. It might have been the police brutality allegations. And now here we are 20 years later with something else. And I think you know what I think is wrong with the New York City police? And not that it's a bad police department. I think it's a great police department with a great tradition. And certainly in the last 20 years, they've cleaned that city up to the extent I don't think a lot of people thought they could. To turn New York City into a tourist destination that is family friendly, where you can walk with your family at 1 o'clock in the morning through Times Square, where you can send your kids out to get pizza at 10 o'clock at night onto Times Square and not fear for their safety, is a pretty remarkable thing, because Times Square was not always like that. So, I mean, I commend New York for that. But I think the police department there is too big.
What are you talking about, man? They got 8 million people.
I know they got 8 million people. But they're going to have to use fewer cops, I think, because I think the larger the police force, the more guys can get into trouble. And I think lines of communication is important. I think the more direct line of communication the regular police officer on the street has with a police chief or a police commissioner, the better the force. I don't know how I would go about making this happen. I just think that it's too big of a force. It's too unwieldy. I don't know how many cops they got in the NYPD, Robert?
I don't know, man, but like 30,000.
30,000?
Yeah, I think it's that big.
30,000 cops? You're kidding.
I think so. I don't know.
That's big, man. That's a freaking... L.A. only has like... what's L.A. got? Like 4,000 cops?
Yeah, but L.A. ain't big as New York.
Well, it's still a big damn city, Los Angeles. What do we got? 3.5 million people here. New York's got 8.
Yeah, that's twice as big.
Well, they ain't got... They got 3 times the cops. So I'm telling you, I think that they got too many cops in New York, if you want my honest opinion. I don't mean that from the standpoint of there's too much, you know, police presence. I don't mean that at all. I'm talking about how do you control and use effectively fewer men and women for the policing effort and the enforcement effort that you need in a city the size of New York. Because the 30,000 cops, man, that's a lot of stuff's going to get lost in the mix. I don't know. Court papers describe this informant, and they used an informant in this gun smuggling. He was a non-U.S. citizen who's been assisting the FBI in exchange for payment and aid in remaining in the United States. One of the police officers involved, William Masso, a New York City police veteran, was interested in making money by transporting stolen goods. An 18-year New York City police veteran, William Masso. In the months that followed, the informant and an undercover investigator posed as the ringleader, began supplying the defendant and others in the case cigarettes purportedly stolen out of state for resale. And then this guy Masso recruited younger officers from his Brooklyn precinct to join the smuggling ring. So, like I said, every 20 years there seems to be something going on in the city of New York.
What was that thing on Goodfellas?
What do you mean, what thing?
Yeah, they said... When they had the in the airport.
The Lufthansa raid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually happened. That was Lufthansa Airlines, a German airline. And those guys actually did get in there, and they ripped off, I don't know how, what, $6 million worth of jewels and money and stuff. See? So that was...
That's a scandal, too.
No, that wasn't a police scandal. That was just a big crime that was committed. The police weren't in on it. The police scandal before that was the Serpico police scandal, which was the police officers taking payment from bookies and basically police officers taking payoffs and bribes. And this one cop, Frank Serpico, would not take these payments and eventually was shot in some, what they think, in some retaliatory episode where the policeman, his fellow officers, didn't come to his assistance when he got shot. All right, and on that very happy note...
Yeah, I'm going to go watch Serpico now. Yeah, me too.
All right, well, I'll be in and watch it with you guys. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night here, we have our producers, Dan Northcraft, Fred Scotty, Chris Johnson, and me, Phil Hendry. Join us on our website at philhendryshow.com. Watch the live streaming video of our show every night on Phil TV in HD and get our downloads. And also, with a BSP, get a backstage pass. Plus, tomorrow, check out the rebroadcast on a stream of our show. So you can go to our 5-day archive and listen to the show streaming for free.
Woo!
Until then, this is Phil Hendry for all of us at the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Good night. See you tonight.
Phil Hendry.